Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Brenda Cardenas is Wisconsin's newest poet laureate. She began her 3-year term at the start of this year. As the state's ambassador for poetry, the Milwaukee native hopes to inspire creativity through workshops, projects, and meeting with young people. July's issue of Milwaukee Magazine explores how Cardenas works with ekphrastic poetry, a form of poetry that collides with visual art. Lake Effect's Excret Nunez is joined by Cardenas to learn more.
Brenda, you're the state's 11th poet laureate. What does it mean to be a poet ambassador for all of Wisconsin?
It's a big role. For me, it means to, in a way, spread the good news of poetry, right? Through workshops, through readings, through talks, to move about the state, both rural and urban, to help people be able to enjoy poetry, access poetry, you know, not think that poetry is something that's only for, you know, academics up in the ivory tower and that it's impossible to understand, which I think sometimes poetry gets a bad rap, right? You know, this poem has to mean X, whereas actually poems can have many different interpretations and a reader always brings their own experience and their own worldview to anything they read. So it's to help people realize that it doesn't have to be that hard to understand or even to write, and also to bring some joy, because we're living in, I mean, I guess every generation can say this, but we're living in some pretty tough times right now, right? And there's a lot of division. And so I'm hoping that poetry can bring people together and that I can help do that through it.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And for listeners who aren't familiar with your poetry, can you tell me about your work and how you approach your writing?
Well, I write about many, many different things. There's not one theme in my work at all. Some of the themes or ideas that are present in over a number of poems over the years, I write about my culture as a Mexican American woman and my own family history. Sometimes I code switch, go back and forth between Spanish and English in some of my poems. Another kind of concern of mine is the environment, right? So I also write poems that people might call eco poems that are observing something about the natural world that I'm hoping that through the poem, others can come to appreciate, because once we appreciate the natural world, then we don't want to destroy it. And sometimes I, rather than thinking ahead of time, I let language lead me. And it's more about creating a word bank, right? And just allowing the language, like a very interesting phrase, phrasing something in a way no one's ever phrased it before, and allowing that line to be what spawns the rest of the poem. So I sometimes don't even know what the poem's going to be about until I finished writing it. And I think that's important because, you know, as poets, our material is language. You know, the visual artist has their paints or their sculpting clay, you know, their materials, right? Their paints, their paintbrush that they're using. We have words, we have language. And I think it's important to remember that language is material and we can play with it and we can move it around and do all kinds of different things with it, which makes writing a lot of fun.
That's so beautiful, the way that you put it that way. So creative. And I also understand that you have an appreciation of art in various forms. But what do you love most about poetry that has kept you connected to it?
Some poems tell stories, some don't. Some just hold a moment. Different poems do different things. But I think what has always captivated me about the form, even before I wrote it, right, just when I was reading it, is that poets tend to do whatever they're going to do in a much smaller container, right, than fiction writers or non. And I really appreciate fiction and nonfiction too. Don't get me wrong. I love to read no matter what it is. But I love the way it's condensed. And I also, again, love that poets try to say something. I mean, what we say, the ideas aren't always new. Often they're not new. It's the way that we say it. It's how we frame it. It's the way that we frame it through an image so that you, as the reader, can take that image in your mind and you can see it in your mind's eye and it all unfolds before you. Or the way that we say it through a comparison, a metaphor, say. So we take one thing and we compare it to something else that, you would never think to compare those two things. They seem like they're completely different worlds, but the poet finds what's similar there. Right, and brings them together, and it's a new way of expressing maybe something very old. And so that freshness in the language is another thing that has always drawn me to poetry. Also, I think poetry is music. Poets often pay much attention to the sounds in their poems, the rhythms and the cadences, as well as using alliteration or consonants or assonance, which are just repetitions of different kinds of sounds. And so we're thinking about the internal music of the language. And it's also that imagery, painting with words, right? That's what's always kept me. When I read a poem where the language just blows my mind, I just sit there after I've read it and go, oh, wow, how did that person do that? How fantastic,
Right, that's amazing. And part of being Wisconsin's Poet Laureate is to create a project and work on it throughout your term. Can you tell me about the project you proposed?
Yes, I've always had a love for visual art, and I don't make it myself, but my brother is a visual artist, and many people in my family, they would never have called themselves visual artists because they were laborers to make their living, but they had that ability, they had that talent. So I've always been drawn to art. And so what the project does is it's what I would call an ekphrastic relay. And what ekphrasis is it's just a mode of poetry in which a poet is inspired by a work of visual art, or writing a poem that's in some way in conversation with a work of visual art. It's interpreting that work of visual art, or it's just a jumping off point for the poet to riff off of, right? And that's all that means. So, in my project, there's a website that I had a web designer create for me, and it's called WisconsinPoetLaureateProject.com, all smashed together, WisconsinPoetLaureateProject.com. And we divided the state into seven regions. And if a poet wants to participate, they just go in there to the website and you register as a poet within your region. If a visual artist wants to participate, they do the same thing. They go in and they register as a visual artist within their region. And then the site has all kinds of prompts, me talking about ekphrasis, all kinds of materials. So you don't have to know about this mode. It's all right there for you. The first 10 or so poets in each region that sign up, they can put up an ekphrastic poem that is responding to or inspired by any work of art in the world. And they post that, right? Then visual artists who have signed up look at those poems, pick one, and make a piece of visual art that is inspired by that poem. They photograph it, they put it up on the website. Then a new set of poets comes along, more poets sign up, they look at those pieces of visual art, they write a poem that's inspired by one of the pieces of visual art. They put it up. Then more visual artists come along, right? So it's in a way like the old game of telephone or a relay, right? Where what began it and what's going to be at the end of that relay will be very, very different from one another. And it's this back and forth, back and forth. And all of the pieces, both the poems and the photographs of the visual art, will all be archived on this website. So everybody will be able to look at everybody's.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, like, would this be exhibited somewhere? But that's amazing that, this will be open for really anyone to check out and register. Well, I also understand that something that you enjoy doing as a poet is collaborating with artists of other media, like you mentioned, like musicians, choreographers, and visual artists. And a project of yours that stood out to me is your poem Para los Tintunderos, which was set to choral music by Daniel Alfonso. So let's listen.
Este para los timbaleros, los bateristas, los tintunteros. Este para los timbaleros, los bateristas, los tintunteros.
Los que tocan con cucharas en sus estufas, armonizantes en sus escritorios, camines judíos.
So, this is a poem celebrating drummers, right?
Yes, it is definitely. It's a poem that, you know, when I think of drummers, in whatever kind of drum it is, whether it's a drum kit that we see rock and roll bands using, or whether it's congas, right, or bongos, whatever it is, right, I think they keep the rhythm for all of us. Even though the poem doesn't say this, if you think about it, drums in history were used to communicate, both by many indigenous peoples and even by African slaves. Like when they were enslaved in the United States and in Britain and other countries, they would use the drums to signal each other, to communicate something to one another over vast distances. So they're really important. But also, just in observing drummers, for a while, when I was younger, I worked with poetry and music ensemble called Sonido Inquieto. And the musicians, when they created music for the poems, the drummer, one thing I noticed about the drummer was that, you know, he was always tapping his foot or always, you know, tapping his knuckles or his fingernails. Like whether he was playing the drums or not, he couldn't stop keeping the rhythm. It was observing him that made me initially write that poem.
And I almost feel like listening to you, this was like an ekphrastic poem, but musically, like Daniel Alfonso read your work and that's how he interpreted it into music and responded.
Exactly. 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 There is a thing called musical ekphrasis as well. Poets responding to music or vice versa. Right. And yeah, I mean, when he contacted me out of the blue, I didn't know him. He's out in California. And he said, you know, I have this poem of yours, and I'm wondering if you would mind if I would compose choral music to it. And I said, well, of course not. That sounds wonderful. And I thought, but how is it going to choral music with that poem? I didn't say that, but I wondered. And then when I first heard it, I was like, oh, my God, if any choral music could have captured that poem or worked with it, this does. You know, he just did, I thought, such a splendid job. Then he, you know, so many months pass, and then all of a sudden I get an email from him that, guess what? Our collaboration is going to be published by Hal Leonard Music as Sheet Music with the words. And Hal Leonard is the biggest music publisher in the country, right? So I was like, oh my God, that's great. And then months passed again, and then I get another email from him. Guess what? Our collaboration is going to be performed at Carnegie Hall by the National Concert Choir. And I said, what? And he said, and I'm going to be in Brazil, so I can't go. But my husband and I went. We have a lot of friends in New York, and it was really, really beautiful. It was like one of the great honors of my life to hear this huge choir singing that piece. It was just, I don't know how to describe that feeling, but it was really tremendous.
That is so cool. Well, Brenda, I understand that you brought a poem with you today, and
yeah.
I was wondering if you could share it with us.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I chose one to share that is a newer poem that was just published in Prairie Schooner magazine, and I just received my copy, so I thought, why not do this one? And before I start, there's a little bit of Spanish in it. Bisabuela is great-grandmother. Burros, as people probably know, are donkeys. Aguacate is avocado, and las Adelitas are the name that Mexicans gave the women soldiers that fought alongside the men in the revolution. And the bandolera was like the X of bullets, right, that they wore across their chests. So in this poem, I am speaking to my great-grandmother, and her son that's referred to in here, the man, is my grandfather. So it's called Lineage. Para la bisabuela I never knew. Our lineage, eight burros fencing a single aguacate tree in the middle of an open field. This is where you kneel. Hide behind the blinking eyes, soft bellies of a breathing shield, tails smacking at buzz-stung air. Torches burn barns to the ground behind you, daughters grasping both your hands, youngest slung across your breast like La Adelita's bandolera, all because you packed a lunch, tied a sprig of mint in your son's hat. They said he was feeding the wrong side, so they bound his hands and marched him blindfolded 3 days to the next village, where a noose wreathed his neck, feet planted like stones on a crate. What if you hadn't burst in, breathless and begging, just before they kicked it out from under him? From under the church that received his sun-beaten body, soaked rags and raindrops of water on clay lips. From under the train that hauled him north, with the woman who housed seeds that would sprout ears perked for each other's screaming when she pushed all of us into the singed world with no ring of stubborn creatures to shield us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's clear what inspired you to write this poem, but I'm also curious, what were you feeling as you wrote this poem?
I was thinking about my grandfather's story. He was almost hung because government people thought he was feeding the revolutionaries, the guerrillas. And he wasn't feeding anybody. It was just his lunch that his mother packed. He was a campesino, he was a field worker. And they almost hung him. This all was real. They marched him through villages for 3 days and then were going to hang him. And luckily, his mother came in at the last minute and she begged them and they let him go, which precipitated their migration, my grandparents' migration to the United States. And so it makes me think, I guess I was feeling the fear and horror he must have felt. Because even on his death, when he was 80 some years old, he retold us that story. So the trauma that never left him. And it makes me think about how most people, when they leave a country to go to another one, is some kind of trauma, some kind of horror, some kind of war, some kind of, that people don't just leave their country for the fun of it, right? There are reasons. And so, partly in writing this poem, there are real good reasons. Often it's to save their lives, right? And in writing this poem, it's telling our story, but I'm also thinking about all of the migrants and refugees today and the horrible ways in which I think we're treating them. And I know that not all listeners will agree with me, but to me, it's unconscionable what's happening, right? And so this is just one story that you see why, someone had to flee. And then I thought about the way in which those burros formed a ring around this tree and shielded my great grandmother. It was a great aunt of mine that told me that part of the story. And, almost like magic, right? That they shielded her so that she could get away from the burning village. And I think of what they went through. And I will always be grateful to my grandparents and all their siblings and my ancestors for everything they went through so that we could flourish. And then I started thinking at the end, of course, my grandmother didn't bore us all, right? She bore children and they bore us, right? But this notion of bringing us into the singed world with no ring of, like, we don't have that ring of, we have other things protecting us, but we don't have that ring of burros around us. And we're still facing a lot of tough times, nothing like what they faced, but hardships. So I don't know if that all makes sense, but.
It makes perfect sense to me. And you were just sharing your family story, your story. And I think it's something that a lot of people can relate to.
So. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we wrap up, I was wondering if you might have any advice for creatives who want to get started in writing poetry.
Oh, first I'd say read, read, read. Read a lot of poetry and read all different kinds of poetry, because then you see what's all possible out there. You know, I mean, there was a time when I never had read another Latino or Latina author who mixed Spanish in with their English. And when I grew up, they didn't give us anything like that in school, right, to read. And when I first discovered that, when I read the, I was like, oh my God, I can do that, right? So I think that gives you ideas and examples. And then the other thing I would say is just write. Don't worry about it at first being a poem. You know, just get down your impressions, your observations. Be observant. A poet needs to be observant of the world around them. Then you can bring it to the page. So just write. And if nothing's coming to me, I'm just going to write whatever garbly gook is in my head. Because if you do that, eventually something will start happening.
I need to take this advice for myself. Thank you so much for speaking with me today and for sharing your impactful poetry with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I really appreciate that you even wanted to talk to me. It means so much.
Brenda Cardenas is Wisconsin's 11th Poet Laureate and was featured in July's issue of Milwaukee Magazine. You can hear more and listen to Cardenas recite one of her poems at WUWM.com.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting WUWM.com/Lake Effect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.